FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Greetings, 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, today let's talk about second waves. And I don't mean just the virus. I mean the economy. Are we having a second wave on the horizon here economically? By second wave, I mean further contraction. You know, the virus... Yesterday, the largest number of daily infections ever, worse than April, over 40,000, 40,000 new infections. Hospital rates up significantly in a whole number of states, especially in the South, Southwest. Meaning it's not just testing. If the hospital rate is going up, that means your infection rate is not just because you're testing more. Yeah, we're in a second wave. I thought it wouldn't happen until the fall. I mean, it came so quickly. Well, you know, they say it's not a second wave. They say it's really an extension of the first wave. Well, that's semantics. All we know is that a lot more people are getting infected again. And why is this? Well, poor leadership, for one. You know, Trump says he's a war president. This is a war on the virus. Yeah, it is a war. But if he's the commander, he's just dropped his rifle and run in the other direction. He's not leading anything. In fact, he's throwing obstacles. This morning we got Pence, Vice President Pence, subbing for Trump. Where's Trump? Yeah, is he out running around, peddling his four-year-old tired themes from 2016? Yeah, I think so. So Pence is subbing, and he, what did he do? He had a press conference, you know, first time here of the virus team. And, oh, what did we hear? Oh, all the great things that's being done by the administration. Yeah, great things, and we're in our worst infections since this whole thing began. Well, you know, to be a little fair, it's not all the lack of poor national leadership. It's the lack of social discipline. People just won't wear masks. They think because the economy is opening that this thing is over. You know, their minds can't make the distinction. They think opening, oh, over. Well, it's not over. It's getting worse. And people just aren't doing their part. Very undisciplined. Americans are very undisciplined. And, you know, there's something about that generation in the middle. I mean, millennials and Gen Zers, you know, they're out there. They're leading the protests. They're discontent because they're the ones who've been whacked here for the last decade economically. And then the boomers who are getting old, tired, and retired stood up during their best years. But what about this Reagan generation? You know, those born after 1965 came to adulthood in the 1980s. Greed is good, you know? I mean, they got this kind of individualism that's just not working, you know? I saw this guy on TV being interviewed, you know, why he wouldn't wear a mask. He said, oh, it's a government conspiracy. If they can control us by getting us to wear masks, well, what's going to come next? They'll even try to control us even worse. That was the rationale, the argument. Can you believe it? And there's tens of millions of those people. You know, in the age group, 35 to 55, 60. Yeah, the dumb generation. It's hard to understand why people just won't even simply wear a mask. Well, part of it is the president is exuding that same message, isn't he? Oh, he gets tests. I bet he gets tests every other day. Oh, but what did he say? Oh, we should reduce the testing. What an oxymoron statement. Hard to comprehend this guy sometimes. You know? Anyway, we got a second wave coming here economically. What will that mean, second wave, to the economy? Will there be a second wave? Well, I've always argued on this show and in my writings that you got to distinguish between the virus-causing impact on the economy and the more fundamental developments already occurring in the economy before the virus hit. You know, there's like two sets of forces and factors, and of course they are interacting with each other. But the virus is really a precipitator, an accelerator, an exacerbator of the economic situation in this country. It telescoped what was already beginning slowly in terms of the economy. As I said many times, no, manufacturing, 6 months recession last year as we went into this thing. Consumers were being tapped out by credit and debt. You know, at the end of last year, defaults in credit cards were at 8%. Normal is about 2% defaults in normal times, 8%. You know, they talked about last year, 2019, how the consumer was holding everything up. Yeah, he was holding it up, and, you know, because of credit cards and debt. And, of course, at the high end, the top 5%, who own most of the stock, were doing quite well because the stock market was booming. All the money was going in the stock market. So the wealth effect, they were doing okay, too. So you had those two factors developing. You know, one credit card debt for everybody at median and below because their real incomes weren't rising. And at the top, you know, their real incomes were rising nicely. So that was driving their consumption. But that was running out, you see. Couldn't extend spending, consumer spending, just based on debt. You got to have real income growth. And we just didn't have it at the median and below. And then business investment in 2019, 9 months of contraction of business investment. That was the picture. And on the trade side, you know, the trade war with China was dampening exports and holding back the trade contribution to GDP, U.S. economy growth. So if you look at it all, you know, the trade, the consumers, and business, and so forth, very weak at the end of last year. And here comes the virus. It's worth repeating again, you know, Trump is, and Pence this morning, oh, we stopped all the flights from China. Oh, and then from Europe. Not true. After his announcement about China, 40,000 people from China came into the U.S., business people, you know, China and Asia, 40,000 were allowed in. He didn't stop anything. And the head of China's CDC contacted the U.S. CDC on January 3rd. They knew about this thing on January 3rd. Well, at least the CDC knew about it. Maybe Trump didn't want to listen to it. They knew about this thing. They just tried to ignore it, or they believed that it wouldn't happen or that it was minor. And then they let all of the people come in from Europe when we had this raging problem in Italy and all over Europe. You remember his announcement, oh, I'm going to stop all of the flights from Europe. except from the UK. Right? That was his first announcement. Well, dummy, don't you think people who wanted to get here from Europe would fly from London? Of course. And then, of course, they had to stop that, too. By the way, you know, the UK is very, very bad off in terms, almost as bad as the US. You know, again, this Anglo-individualism is really working against us. You know, why is it that South Korea and other countries are able to control this thing? What did they do? Well, they had social discipline and leadership. The people there followed the government's restrictions and limitations. And, you know, in China, they really got draconian. I was listening to an interview, and how did they handle it in China? Well, you can't go into a store anywhere without getting your temperature taken. And if your temperature is out of whack, they look at your cell phone, see where you've been. And if your cell phone shows you've been anywhere where there was an outbreak, you are immediately sent back home. And immediately someone from the government comes to your apartment, checks on you, and if you are ill, you know what they do? They shut your door and tape it. You cannot leave. Well, that's pretty draconian. I don't think Americans would put up with that, and I don't know what I agree with that either. But that just shows you that the degree of enforcement in a war, it's a wartime situation. It's a war. You know, we lost 126,000 people already, and that's probably an underestimate. Because what I've seen is that epidemiologists are indicating that the true infection rate is about 10 times what actually is being reported. So we've got 2.5 million people reported. It's really about 20 million. I don't know how true that is, but that's what they say. So the death rate and the amount that have died from this is probably more than 126,000. But that's more than all the wars since World War II. Americans have died in wars since World War II. You know, Korea and Vietnam and all the rest. More than in World War I. I'll tell you, by the end of the year, it may be more than World War II, which I think was like 350 or 400,000 lost in World War II Americans. This is the worst war since the Civil War in the 1860s, in which it's estimated the U.S. lost somewhere around 800,000 on a population much, much smaller. That was really devastating. Well, the way this thing's being managed, you know, we may be on the way to similar losses. I don't know. That's kind of extreme, but could be if they don't get their handle on this. You know, they got no treatments for this thing. They have no vaccine yet. You know, watch Trump. I'm going to predict. Trump is going to announce a vaccine, his October surprise, whether there's one or not. He's going to announce it. And he's really in trouble politically. Now, the big capitalists, the right and left, are abandoning him. You can see it. You know, the generals are all together on this thing now, announcements, and all the previous presidents, including George W. Bush and others, you know, they're all ganging up on him now. Well, he's done all that they want him to do. You know, he's deregulated business massively, saved them a lot of money. He's given them trillions of dollars in tax cuts. And by the way, we continue to give them trillions of dollars in tax cuts. As I said many times, I'm not going to go over it. The Trump tax cuts of 2018 totaled more than $4 trillion because they don't calculate accurately how much U.S. multinational corporations got in the tax cuts under Trump over a decade. They don't calculate that because we essentially eliminated all taxes on foreign profits. of U.S. multinational corporations. You know, especially the big pharma, the big banks, big tech, number of other industries, oil and energy. Yeah, they don't pay anything on their foreign profits anymore. That's a huge number, you know. That's a huge number. And that's why it's over $4 trillion. Well, then in 2019, they gave businesses and investors another $429 billion tax cut and expanded loopholes. And then in the CARES Act here just passed, you don't hear much talk about it, but there's another $650 billion in tax cuts there. Only 3% of which go to households earning $100,000 or less. So it's all investors, wealthy households, corporations, businesses in the CARES Act. And now we'll see how much more in the HEROES Act, because it's very clear that what Trump wants in this next, quote, bill, which we'll see probably something at the end of July, is more tax cuts. Even more tax cuts. Capital gains tax cuts, payroll tax cuts, business expenses tax cuts. Tax cut, tax cut, tax cut. More and more money given to investors, corporations that then shovel it off to their shareholders, who then all plow the money back into financial markets and stock markets and keep the stock markets going up while the rest of the economy is crashing. More and more tax cuts, more and more government deficits and government debt. So far, we've added, what, $3-5 trillion to the government deficit and debt in just a few months, and more is coming. Yeah, almost $30 trillion national debt here by the end of the year. A massive, massive amount of debt. Oh, and they're going to come after Social Security, you know, with forks and knives. They're going to carve it up. And education and everything else. A massive redistribution of income to the wealthy going on in this country. Massive, unprecedented. You can't even imagine the scope and magnitude of it. Okay. You know, partly Trump, why we got the second wave, and administration and politicians, and, you know, the flip side of Trump is Mitch McConnell. Trump couldn't be doing what he's doing without McConnell, and vice versa. And then what do we have here? We have a whole generation of lack of social discipline. Those two things together make the U.S. one of maybe the worst country in the world in containing the virus. No wonder we have a second wave. I mean, maybe Bolsonaro's Brazil is just as bad. Maybe, I don't know. Numbers there are pretty bad too. Same kind of attitude. So will this second virus wave translate into a second wave in the economy is the question, a key question. We know the first wave certainly did by shutting down the economy. But, you know, you don't have to shut down the economy to have an effect economically on the economy. No. So how do you have an effect? How do you have an effect on the economy? Well, one of the main transmission mechanisms, if you might want to call it that, of how the virus has an effect on the economy and exacerbates trends already, is through confidence. Consumer confidence, business confidence. If consumers don't think that recovery is here and around, or, you know, very close around the corner, they're not going to go out and spend. like they were before. We're not returning to 2019 consumer spending. No way. People are unsure. You know, you got 40 million people minimum unemployed. We're still running 1.5 million new unemployment benefit filings every week for the last 3-4 weeks. Yeah, 1.5 million filing. And that's an underestimate because that number does not include the filing for benefits by this new group under the CARES Act. It's called the PUC program that provides for the first time unemployment benefits to gig workers and independent contractors. That's another 700,000 a week filed last week alone. Yeah, another 700,000. So, you know, 1.4, whatever, new filings last week, you add 700,000 on that. That's over 2 million. And that's going on every week. I mean, there's over 10 million independent contractors in this country. And I think there's almost as many gig workers in this country. The government data does not really pick up gig worker numbers very accurate. You know why? Because they only ask when they do their surveys, is gig work your number one job or your primary job? Well, most people are doing gig work. That's a secondary job because the first job doesn't pay enough, you know? So they're not picking up all the gig jobs out there. And there's probably at least 5-10 million gig workers, you know, 10 million independent contractors. And they're not being picked up accurately in the unemployment numbers. You know, you keep hearing this nonsense about 13.3%. Well, that's only full-time jobs, people who were full-time employed, which leaves out 50, 60 million people in the economy, contractors, part-time, temp, and so forth. That's such a phony number, 13.3. And even that was an error, as we talked about last time. And they adjusted it. Well, they never adjust the number even when they make an error. But it was really 16 point something, full-time unemployed. But then you got to throw in all these other categories. I mean, even the government's data and statistics, when they calculate and underestimate, but calculate part-time and temp, is 20.2 or 20.5% unemployed. Even that, which gives you somewhere close to 30 million, even that is not reported in the media. They pick the lowest ball number they can, which is the 13 or 16%. We're really somewhere between 25 and 30% unemployed, which means somewhere around 40 to 45 million people still jobless. Still jobless in this country. Now, with that many people jobless, do you really think we're going to get a recovery? That's that many people who aren't spending or spending just what they have to. That's not a stimulus. You see, this unemployment insurance, these checks was not an economic stimulus. This is mitigation, as they said themselves in March. This was designed, the CARES Act, to put, you know, a floor for a couple months, two and a half months, under the collapse. Well, it did. It put a floor under the collapse, a partial floor. It didn't put a full floor under it. $500 billion went in unemployment extension and expansion. And $1,200 checks. Yeah, that helped. That helped. But that's gone now. We need it. The mitigation is gone for households. We need a stimulus for household consumer spending. And what about business in the CARES Act? $1.7 trillion in loans and grants to businesses funneled through the Fed. Plus another $650 billion in taxes, tax cuts. Well, the tax cuts aren't a stimulus because businesses don't have to spend the tax cuts now. They can wait to the end of the year, even next year, when they take the tax cut. And when they take the tax cut, they can use it for something else. You know, they can use it to invest in stocks and bonds and pay their shareholders, give themselves new bonuses, the tax cuts. Yeah, they can do that. So there's no stimulus there to $650 billion. Yeah, there's stimulus to $500 billion for households, unemployment, and checks. And there's a stimulus to some extent in the $660 billion in loan grants to small business, 4.5 million small businesses. Hey, there's at least that many who aren't getting anything. There's more than 4.5 million small businesses in this country, depending on how you define it. It could be 9 million. It could be 30 million. 4.5 million, $660 billion, yes. That helps. Much of that is spent. But you know what? The $1.1 trillion in loans available to big corporations and medium-sized corporations hasn't even been taken up. Last figures I saw, $500 billion for large corporations. Maybe $100 billion has been taken up in loans. And they're just starting now, medium-sized business, with the Main Street program for the $600 billion in loans. In other words, this total amount under the CARES Act hasn't even hit the economy. What's hit the economy is maybe 5.5% of GDP, a contraction that is four times worse than it was in 2008, in which we stimulated the economy about 5.5%. Too little. That's why we got this, we got that Obama's recovery for the few. Sluggish during Obama. It took 6 years to get the jobs back. Well, we're stimulating the economy the same amount today, and it's four times worse contraction. There's no real economic stimulus going on in this country. You know, you contrast that with Germany and some other countries, you know, they're spending 10, 20% to stimulate their economies. And the U.S. is spending 5%. That's because they give tax cuts that sit and get hoarded, and they give loans to big businesses that sit and get hoarded and don't hit the economy. Low interest rates don't mean a damn. Businesses are not going to borrow money and invest and expand production when no one's buying their stuff. They're going to sit on it. And that's what's happening. They're sitting on it. They don't need the loans. They don't need the loans from the government, big corporations. They're flush, fat, bloated with cash going into this thing. Yeah, they drew down hundreds of billions of dollars into credit lines from their banks. They suspended their dividends, hundreds of billions of dollars. They're sitting on that cash. They issued corporate bonds over $1 trillion. I think it's like $1.3 trillion in just 3 or 4 months. Raised that cash. A lot of them now, I'm reading, are selling off minority stakes in other businesses they have, raising cash that way. They're raising cash in as many ways as they can. Some of them are purposely not calling workers back because it's a big cost savings for them. They found ways to really reduce their wages. You know, people being brought back to work, just a portion of what was lost. I saw figures, small business employment dropped since February by 42% through April, I believe it is. Maybe May 12th. 42%. Well, people started going back to work when we opened the economy, and now it's 27%. So what, about a third of those laid off have been called back during this reopening? Only a third? And most of them are being called back part-time, temp, not fully. They're bringing, businesses bringing back skeleton crews. Or they're not bringing back the full amount that they had in 2019 in terms of jobs. They're being cautious. They're testing the water to see how much demand there really is. No business worth its damn is going to just simply say, oh, well, this is going to be like November last year. Let's just bring everybody back right now. Businesses don't do that. They test the water. Their expectations of economic recovery are very low, just as the consumers' expectations are very low. So they're just tepidly entering back into the economy. I mean, you know, maybe your local bars are hiring all their bartenders back, you know. But in a lot of places, they're going to be shut down real quick, including Texas, because they're really social petri dishes here. People sitting next to each other on a bar stool, talking into each other's face 12 inches apart, huh? You don't think they're not going to get it? Yeah, they're going to get it. And by the way, you know, if you, from what I heard from Arizona, most of the infections are people under 35, like 73% of the infection rate, which is booming in Arizona, and they're running out of ICU beds right now. I think they're at like 90-some percent of capacity, are younger people. And younger people, you know, can be asymptomatic, carry it, and spread it to older people or people with conditions who can't handle it. And there's some evidence that, you know, genetically here, some people are more susceptible to extreme forms of the virus effect on them. You know, certainly males, certainly older people with, and anybody with reduced immune systems are in trouble. Yeah, but also it's beginning to look like, you know, the blood problem here associated with the virus may have something to do with your genetic makeup and the receptors, you know, on your cells, which is kind of technical. I don't understand that totally. But also your blood type. A blood type, people seem to be more susceptible. Anyway, I don't want to go into the biology. I'm no expert. But we have a secondary effect economically coming that doesn't require a shutdown. They're not going to shut down the economy again. No way. No way. You know, they push the economy to the precipice of depression here. Certainly we're in a great recession, but, you know, we're hovering on the cusp of a depression. All we need is a financial crash, and that'll be it. But confidence, business confidence. They're not investing, not expanding. They're not bringing everybody back, bringing more part-time back. And consumers are spending, you know, they're going out, but not that much. You know, not that much. The younger ones are going out because they got cabin fever. And the middle-aged people are going out, but that's not enough. And the economy is kind of not falling as fast. It's not a recovery. You know, a good phrase is that of used recently this past week by the chief economist for the World Bank, Carbon Reinhardt. They didn't really run, you know, the clip of her statement very much here beyond just the business media. They should have, because what Reinhardt said was that, look, you have to distinguish between a rebound and a recovery. We may experience a temporary rebound, but rebounds don't mean recovery. And as she correctly said, recovery is when you get back to where you were before it happened. That's a recover. You recovered the lost ground. And how much ground have we lost? Well, the Federal Reserve estimates the second quarter GDP will contract 41.9%. That's the Fed's Atlanta GDP Now indicator. You know, a couple weeks ago, maybe it was early June, late May, I'm not sure. 41.9%. Wow, that's mind-boggling. The New York Fed has a similar forecast to GDP called the Now Forecast, and they estimated 30.5% contraction in the second quarter. You know, and the official contraction first quarter was 5%. So it's 30%, 41% on top of the 5%. Now, I think it's not going to be that extreme in the second quarter. I think it's going to be somewhere around 20, 25% contraction. But even that, that's a fourth of GDP. If GDP was $20, $21 trillion, you're talking about, you know, $6 trillion taken out of the economy. And, you know, they're forecasting, well, you know, for the whole year, maybe 6% or 8%, not 8%, 6% contraction for 2020. Well, that's assuming we got a vigorous, robust bounce back in the second half, which we're not going to get now, very clearly. Yeah, that's what the U.S. economy is contracting. Massive contraction underway. And we don't know what's going to happen with the, quote, stimulus in the HEROES Act, which is blocked up by Mitch McConnell because the Republicans want more tax cuts for their friends. They don't want to provide money for the state and local governments that are really in a crisis financial fix right now. You know, their revenues have collapsed and their spending has gone way up to battle the virus. What are they going to do? They need a real big bailout. If not, you're going to see in the second half mass layoffs at state and local government. Yeah, big layoffs you're going to see. State and local governments really need a boost. And the House, U.S. House Representative, proposed that in the HEROES Act, but McConnell doesn't want it. He wants to let them go bankrupt because the worst shape the states are the blue states. He wants the blue states to go bankrupt. Or he wants to force them to borrow in the municipal bond market. Borrow. Go further in debt, states. Well, that boosts all the investors in the muni market, doesn't it? Yeah. Incur more debt. Well, you know, the federal government's adding $5, $6 trillion in debt. You states should do the same. That's kind of the argument being made, you see. And they want to convert the unemployment insurance to a wage subsidy for business. Yeah, they want to get rid of the $600 supplement when it expires at the end of July, and they want to turn that into a direct government payment to businesses. Instead of unemployment to the unemployed, the workers, give them money directly to businesses to pay the wages, a wage subsidy. Whether they need it or not, you see. So what are businesses going to do? Well, sure, give us the money to pay our workers, and we'll take the money we were going to use to pay our workers, and we're going to use it for something else, including
dividends and stock buybacks and more bonuses for us CEOs and so forth. Yeah, they'll take the money they're going to use for wages, and they'll use the money for something else and let the government pay the workers. Well, if the government's going to pay the workers, why don't they just work for the government? You know, let's put them to work in infrastructure. Let's create a government investment corporation to invest and spend, you know, restoring our infrastructure, which has fallen apart, or expanding into alternative energy infrastructure. Now, I got another proposal here that should be in the HEROES Act, and that is if large businesses are not spending the $1.1 trillion in loans allocated for them under the CARES Act, well, why don't we just take that $1.1 trillion that's already been allocated on the books and give it to small businesses that desperately need it, that aren't getting it, you know, and to the unemployed. Instead of taking unemployment insurance and giving it to businesses and wage subsidies, let's take the unused tax cuts and the unused loans and use it to create a government investment corporation that will invest. If businesses won't, the government must restore our infrastructure, expand into new areas. That's a must of investment, Green New Deal, whatever. I don't care what you call it. Put people to work. And if businesses won't hire everybody back, well, then the government must. That's what happened in the 30s, you know. Same thing happened. We had public works. Businesses would not recall the 25% unemployed. So the government stepped in, created the Works Progress Administration, hired workers directly. Didn't pay a minimum wage either. Hired them directly. Put money in the hands of consumers. And the economy recovered in the second half of the 30s as a result. You know, look, if they won't do it, then the government should do it. Compete with them. And maybe that'll get them off their ass and invest and hire people. If they know the government is going to do it, they may, wait a minute, you know, you're taking our future demand from us, our future income and profits. Oh, okay. Well, all right. You get off your ass and invest and hire. You know, we'll step back. But until you do, the government's going to do it. Well, that's what we did in the 30s, you know. That's what they're refusing to do now. All right, so looking forward, what does the economy look like? You know, do we have a second wave here in the economy, just as we're obviously having a second wave in the virus, and it may be worse than the first. And, you know, historically, that's always been the case. When you have a big pandemic, the second wave is worse than the first wave. That's what happened in 1918. That's what happened in 1957-8. Two big pandemics. Second wave, worse than the first. And then there's a third wave that's not as bad. Well, we're obviously in this country, at least, and a few others, entering that stage. What will be the impact on the economy? As I said, you don't necessarily have to shut down to have an impact on the economy. And they won't shut down now. I mean, look, the politicians have made up their minds, especially Trump and company, that we will trade off deaths for revenue and profits. That decision's been made. That train's left the station. It will not come back. They will not shut down the economy. Oh, they may shut down certain sectors or industries or whatever. You know, they may close the bars or something like that. But they won't order sheltering in place like they did. The economy is so weak. They can't risk it. And they know it, especially in election year. Well, it will impact expectations, the psychology of investors and consumers. That will be the main channel. Okay, so if we're looking at what will be the impact, you have to say, well, let's look at the four main sectors of the economy. Four main sectors. We're talking about a possible second economic wave. What are the four main sectors of the economy? Well, it's consumption, which is 66-70% of GDP. It's business investment, which is maybe 10%, 10-12% of GDP. And what is business investment? Well, it's in plant and equipment, it's in structures, commercial property, it's in inventories. You know, that's what constitutes business investment. Consumption, that's services, consumption of services, consumption of goods, durable goods, non-durable goods. Third sector is trade, exports and imports, contributes to GDP. And then there's government spending. Most government spending occurs at the state and local level, by the way. You know, the government allocates a lot of money for spending, but then it gives it to the state and local government to implement, to actually spend, except for defense. That's direct from the federal government. Okay, so you got to look at those four sectors: consumption, business investment, trade, and government spending. Government spending, historically for decades has been about 20-21% of GDP. Yeah. Well, as I've been arguing from the very beginning, that's got to double if you really want a true stimulus, and not in the form of loans and tax cuts to businesses. It's got to be direct. That's what it was in 1942. We went to 40% GDP government spending in 1942. Now, a lot of that was military spending, and they hired a lot of people. But it resulted in direct hiring. But you can't do that with defense anymore, because most of the spending is on very, very high-cost technology and equipment. You know, it costs, what, $350 million to build one jet aircraft. Back in World War II, it was like $40,000 to build a plane. So you can't build as many. You can't get as much of a stimulus out of military spending anymore. So it's got to be spending on infrastructure, spending on government services, and spending on pumping up manufacturing. You know, you talk about manufacturing, part of the problem is the supply chains have been broken globally. And there's talk of, we should force these companies to bring back their supply chain and produce in the U.S., especially obvious, you know, glaringly PPE equipment, you know, made abroad, made in most of it in China, you know. They're going to have to bring that back to the U.S. Well, let's look at these four sectors. Where are they now? You know, four sectors, I mean consumption, business investment, trade, and government spending. Where are we right now? What's the condition of those four sectors, which tells you the condition of the U.S. economy as of late June on the eve of the second wave? Well, consumption. Well, let's look at existing home sales or home sales, both single-family, multifamily apartments, right? Let's look at sales, existing homes. Existing home sales are 90% of all sales of homes. New homes are only 10% of the total. So existing homes, latest figures show a 26.6% decline year on year. The worst decline since 1982. Family, I mean, apartment, multifamily homes, 41% decline. This is the picture of the construction sector, which is like 8% of GDP. Commercial properties in there, that's even worse. You know, we got a collapse of spending on building hotels, building resorts, you know, building office buildings, building malls. Hell, the malls are going bankrupt across the country. And the big retail stores that were anchoring them, you know, like the Penney's and Neiman Marcus, Lord Taylor, and all the others, they're going bankrupt too. And that means all the little companies, little stores, retail in those malls, without the big anchor boxes at the end of those malls, are soon going to go under as well. You're going to have ghost town malls all across this country here before the end of the year. So existing home sales have collapsed so far, and it doesn't show there's a lot of recovery going on until they really lower the interest rates. You know, they're just starting to lower mortgage rates. The banks delayed it, even though, you know, supposedly mortgage rates follow the 10-year bond rate, treasury bond rate. Well, the 10-year treasury bond rate is what? 0.7710%. And what were the mortgage rates? Oh, they're still at 3.5%. What a spread. Well, the banks like the spread. They make money that way, you see. So now it's so weak. Now, only now they're starting to bring down the interest rates, the mortgage rates in this case. That might stimulate a little bit, but it's so far down. You know, is it the cost of investing that drives investing people buying homes, right? I.e. the interest rate, is it the cost? Or is it the expectation of my income? You know, it doesn't matter how low the mortgage rates are. I'm not going to buy a house if I don't think I'm going to have a job. New home sales, by the way, are up 12%. But that's only 10% of the total of housing, you see. 39 million jobless is a consensus, not the 20 million you hear by the Labor Department in the media. 39 million, that's the economic consensus. Now, on top of 39 million jobless, the hours worked, those who are still working, is down 15% in the last couple of months. So those people being brought back to work are still working, are working fewer hours, you see. That reduces income as well. Here's some other figures between April and May. Personal income in April, 10.8. This is an index, right? 10.8. Well, that's because of the CARES Act, right? People started getting their money. In May, negative 4.2. Disposable income has dropped between April and May by 800 billion. Disposable, that's what people really have to spend, you see. Credit cards declined 12% usage in April. Down 68% in May. People aren't using credit cards to spend. That's part of this whole thing of hoarding your cash, you see. Savings rates in April up, household savings rate up 33%. People saving, hoarding, not spending, unsure, expectations negative. Consumer spending down $200 billion between April and May. Consumer confidence down. In other words, all the indicators, the latest, very latest indicators, are such that it doesn't really predict a big recovery in consumer spending. Now, we got this number here that got a lot of attention, retail sales, which is a subset of consumer spending. Retail sales up 14%, or maybe it was 16%. Well, that follows in previous month collapse of of 14%. So it's really only up 2%, you see. And that doesn't factor in the contraction in February and May, in March. How about business investment? Okay. It's been contracting every month since January through April, May. Contracting. Every month. Well, remember, that's on 9 months contraction last year. So nothing there. You're not going to get any business investment stimulus here. Manufacturing and services. We, you know, the indicator is called the PMI, Purchasing Managers Index. Tells you whether manufacturing is growing or whether it's contracting. And the same with services. There's two of them, you see. One's for services, one's for manufacturing. Services is kind of more important because it's bigger. Well, what are the figures for April and May and June for those that have come out? Well, manufacturing PMI in April was only 36.1. You need 50.0 just not to be contracting. You mean you're not growing, you're not contracting at 50. If it's over 50, you're expanding manufacturing. If it's under 50, manufacturing's contracting. Okay, so obviously in April, big contraction, 36.1. May, 39.8. Still contracting. June, 49.6. Still contracting, even with the economy opening up and everybody going back. Not everybody, but people going back to work. Still contracting. Not as fast. And that's really the picture, you see. The economy, as it opened up, and from virtually nothing, people started spending and, you know, producing things and providing services. As the economy opened up in May, you know, in the South first. That's why they got a worse situation with the virus there. Still contracting or stagnating. Right? Non-manufacturing index, services index. Well, it was expanding January, February, and even March. And then it fell to 41.8 in April, 45.4 in May. Okay, a little slower contraction. That's the picture. And the same, if you add both of them, called the composite PMI, 37 index number in May, 46.8 in June. So we're not contracting as fast as we were, but we're not recovering. We are rebounding, you see, a little bit. We're rebounding. Well, what about trade? You know, if consumption and business investment is flat to negative still, what about trade? What about the global economy? Well, the World Trade Organization predicts an 18.5% contraction of global trade. The IMF this year, for the whole year, IMF 12%. 28% in the Eurozone, 6% in Asia, 16% in the U.S. Global GDP will contract between 5 and 7% worldwide, according to the World Bank and the IMF and the OECD. In other words, the picture for the global economy is falling further, contracting further. Well, that means exports from the United States are also going to contract. If the whole world's contracting, there's no demand for U.S. goods, you're not going to sell as much, you're not going to produce as much. And the latest figure was, for the first quarter, I think, a 20% contraction in U.S. exports. So this third area, GDP of the economy, nothing there. Government spending, yeah, we got some military spending. And then we got the CARES Act, which I said is only 5%. The picture is not rosy. As we go into the second wave of the virus here in the third quarter.